in the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, cleared for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 5321, Mike, and we're downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast. Well, hello, and welcome to episode 8, Bravo, of the In the Pattern Podcast. This is the second half of our first episode, where we listen to me talk about my private pilot check ride. Now, in this half, we're going to listen to Chris and Mark talk about what they've been up to. So I hope you enjoy.
Well, should I go next, I guess?
Sure.
All right.
Go for it.
Well, since last episode, I've... done a day cross country and a night cross country, and then just Tuesday night, a couple nights ago, I did some stop and goes during the night to finish up my requirements for night cross country. So anyway, if I go back to my first day cross country, and when I was talking a minute ago about, you know, do you have a lot of airports that are right next to each other? I thought I was being all cool by putting all these airports in here as checkpoints. What a huge pain in the ass that turned out to be. I mean, a lot of these airports are, you know, 10 miles apart or less, and one airspace is almost touching the other. And so anyways, I'll get into it a little bit more. So my day cross country, I had set to leave Deer Valley, and I wanted to land at Scottsdale Airport, which is just 9 miles away. And that was going to be my first leg. I wanted Scottsdale checked off as an airport that I could go to, basically. That's why I chose it to land there right away. And then I was going to overfly Falcon Field, use the Willie VOR over at Williams Gateway Airport, and then finally land at Coolidge, and that would equate to about almost 60 miles in a straight line. So that would count for the cross country. And so I leave Deer Valley. I don't know if you saw the video. I leave Deer Valley, head towards Scottsdale, and right away, you know, they give me clearance, or they clear me out of Deer Valley right away, so I can switch over and get on Scottsdale. So they release me from Deer Valley. I get ATIS real quick and contact Scottsdale and I'm almost entering their airspace at that point, you know. So everything's happening so fast. In the meantime, I've climbed to 4,000 feet. Even on my flight plan, I only said I was going to go to 3,000. So right away, the first leg, I've already overclimbed my altitude by almost 1,000 feet, and I'm almost entering their airspace. And so I get a hold of them. They clear me to land, and my instructor is like, "All right, do you see the airport?" And I'm looking out the windshield. It's kind of glaring because we're headed towards the sun a little bit. "No, I'm not really seeing it." She goes, "It's right down there, and it's practically off my wing below me."
Well, that's where she says, "Okay, you got to drop 2,000 feet right now."
Yeah. So I'm like, of course, I'm in their airspace, but they've already let me in at that point. But I'm looking in the distance for this airport, and I'm already almost on top of it. So I just do an extended downwind. I basically, you know, put it. At idle and drop the nose, give it some flaps and drop fast and do an extended downwind, and made my turn and landed. It was all uneventful and everything was okay, but I was way, way, way too high for that thing. I don't know. I was a little too nervous going into this thing, 'cause I had set up so many different checkpoints along the way. I don't know what the proper way to do it is. She had me design it myself, what I wanted to do. And I wanted to kind of, I don't know, get the most bang for my buck, I guess. So we land at Scottsdale, taxi back, take back off, head towards Falcon Field. And I wasn't really planning on contacting Falcon Field because I was going to be over top of their airspace. But, you know, as a courtesy, you know, you should do that, you know, she says. So I do. I contact them. Everything's cool. I pass Falcon Field, and then I'm heading to then I'm tuned into the Willie VOR, and this is the first time I've ever, you know, used the nav radio and the VOR, so that's a lot of fun. I got my dots and dashes. Yeah, I'm on the right VOR. I'm tuned in. Everything's cool, and I contact them, and he comes back to me like an auctioneer, and I must have missed a little bit what he said after I re-listened to the audio and watched my video after I made it again. I realized what he said, but basically I was touching Class Bravo. Yeah, and I wasn't by my instruments, but it's because I didn't adjust my altimeter when he gave me the altimeter. I don't know, a couple tenths or whatever, but that was enough. And I was just touched Bravo, and he told me to descend into his airspace. So I did, and everything was cool. I didn't get no phone call later, so that was good. And headed on out to Coolidge. Now from Gateway Airport to Coolidge is about 25 miles. So this is the first time I've had a few minutes to get things set up. And at this point, I haven't had time to write down how long it took me to get from one point to the next, you know, like I should be doing. I'm just, you know, I'm like bigger, busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. I'm just tuning radios, adjusting, you know, altitude, adjusting headings the whole time. You know, I have way too much stuff going on.
Forget about looking outside.
Yeah. So on the way to, I felt like I was under the hood the whole time because I'm constantly tweaking and changing things, you know.
First cross country is always fun.
Yeah. So we head into Coolidge, and this is the part where there's finally a large enough gap, and we're finally running out of city. Now we're, you know, it's just desert out there. So how are you gonna know where you are? You know, she goes, what do you have on your map that's gonna tell you where you're at? I'm like, oh well, you know, there's, I forget what it was. There's a golf course up here. Oh, there it is. You know, and here's that city on my map. I can see it, and I even noticed a fire going on with some smoke, and I could see. I said, oh look, there's smoke, and apparently we've got a headwind. You know, we normally haven't seen anything like that to indicate what kind of what the winds were. So that was good to spot. So Coolidge P08 is a, and this is Sunday, but it's an unmanned airport, not towered. There is three runways, and it's kind of shaped in the like a letter A. So there are two at an angle and one across the middle. But one of the runways has X's on it, so it's out of service. And then that short runway, I guess, is just used for a jumper activity that goes on around there. So really, there's one runway that they use consistently. So this is the first time I'm calling my own traffic. So I botched that up, I think, a little bit several times because I'm used to having a controller to talk to. So I kind of make a fool of myself on the Unicom there and overfly the field 500 above TPA to get a look at the windsock to check for direction. And it looked limp, so we made a decision to come in on I don't remember which runway off the top of my head, but it don't really matter. So we went ahead and made a landing there. So that was my second landing of the day, and at that point, we switched fuel tanks and got out my paperwork for the second leg of the flight, for the flight back, and kind of tallied up my numbers, estimated about what we did actual versus what I did estimated. And I had estimated the flight to take 33 minutes. It took 46. And I estimated my fuel at 7.2 gallons, and it took around 8. So I wasn't too far off on the fuel, but I was off quite a bit on the time. But again, I noticed a headwind that we were in too, so that made a little bit of difference.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So on the way back, we take off from Coolidge. While I was there, a couple more planes landed there. Kind of a cool old airport too, by the way. There's an old World War II hangar still there that's in some bad shape. There's several C-130s sitting there that are slurry planes that they use for firefighting, I guess. I think there was a DC-7 or something sitting there that was under maintenance. But so we take off from Coolidge, and now I'm heading for the Stanfield VOR. And that's 25 miles away, so I got 25 miles to work the VOR, and that was cool. I actually saw the VOR from the sky. It was at about 6,500 feet, but you could easily spot it. And made about a 90-degree correction to the right after Stanfield and headed for Firebird Lake. That's the checkpoint that everyone uses before they contact Phoenix Sky Harbor for Bravo transition. So I contact Phoenix Sky Harbor and got clearance through the Bravo. They assigned me an altitude and a squawk code, of course. That went good. Got through Sky Harbor. And I had another checkpoint of the Squaw Peak, but at that point I can already see Deer Valley. So made it back to Deer Valley good, entered the pattern, landed. All was good, but honestly, if I was to do it again, I wouldn't. I don't know if I'd put all these airports in there the way I did. It was certainly a lot of work for my first time out in a cross country. It was 133 miles, something like that. 2.1 hours is what I logged, and 3 landings for that day. So it was a lot of fun getting to use a little bit more of the airplane than I have so far as the navigation goes. We didn't use the Garmin 430 for any of that day, other than, you know, for the radios. We didn't use any of the GPS function of it. So
you know, when watching the video, it at one point in time you guys were messing with the 430s.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it wasn't clearing or something. It almost sounds like they need maintenance.
Yeah, the top one, for whatever reason, we can't get the airspace to come back on it. And you're supposed to just be able to hit the clear button, cycle through all of it, and it will eventually put it back, but it won't. The bottom one's just fine, and the two settings, if you go through the menus, are identical. Mm-hmm. So I think the top one could use looked at for whatever reason, because she knows what she's doing with it. She's been using it for years. And, you know, I've played around with it enough. I think I know what I'm doing with it a little bit, at least to cycle, you know, supposedly you just hit clear enough times and it cycles through, but I don't know. Yeah, we wanted to use it for airspace, the main thing, because, you know, like I mentioned, a lot of these airports are practically touching. And as soon as you're off the ground at one, you're getting ATIS, like you're staying on. You're staying on your frequency for the airport you just took off from, and on your other radio, you've dialed in ATIS, and you're monitoring on it. So you're trying to multitask the whole time, trying to get two things done at once. And then as soon as you're released from that airport, then you can switch over and contact the other airport, telling them that you're going to be entering their airspace, etc.
I want a third radio. I'll be honest.
Like... You mean like a handheld?
No, I want a Nav 3.
Oh.
Or not a Nav 3, a Com 3.
Oh, I see.
I just, there's too many frequencies I have to have sometimes. And it's just like, I want them all there and I want it, you know, to be ahead of the plane. But sometimes I run out of frequencies that I can put in, you know?
Yeah.
I think you can do that. Well, not multiple, not a third radio, but I think you can actually pre-program all your frequencies in the Cirrus with the Avidyne. I think you can, put your flight plan in. You just scroll down, boop. Okay. Now you're talking to that frequency. Okay. Scroll. Boop.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. It's all part of, you know, it has the approach plates and everything. If you want a certain airport, you know, and you're already showing that airport on your map or whatever. Yeah. You just tell it what airport you're going to and it sets up the frequencies in your radio for you at a click of a button.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I would love to have that.
I like all that except for that price. Avidyne system will cost, you know, several times more than my first airplane I'll ever fly in. ever be a partner in, I'm sure. So that was January 16th. And then...
What about the 16th?
January 16th. That was that day cross-country trip.
Nice. So you took that on the day of my check ride.
Yeah. Yeah, me and you did that at the same time. That's right.
Yeah.
And then 4 days later, we go for a night cross country. And
woohoo!
Yeah.
Do you have your fuses?
Huh?
I said, do you have your fuses?
My fuses for the fuse panel?
Yeah.
Extras? No, I don't.
Don't you have one of those?
No. Extra fuses?
Yeah.
No. No extra fuses.
No fuse panel?
Yeah, there's a fuse panel. I always check it.
There are breakers.
Mm-hmm.
In the arms of the breakers.
They're all breakers.
Yeah. They just pop out and push back in.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Different than fuses. So, yeah, we don't have to – I found that out. I was like – because for a while I kept thinking, man, night you need the fuses. And we didn't know where they were. And I was like, wait a minute, we have breakers.
Oh, okay. So – for the night cross country, I pretty much did the same trip but in reverse order. But I added more airports because I didn't learn my lesson. Apparently,
what?
Oh, jeez. So it was 2.5 hours, and I landed at 5 different airports at night.
Wow.
You're insane.
It was. I don't know. By the time it was all done and I was making my final leg back to Deer Valley, I had a splitting headache. I was just mentally exhausted. But anyway, so we take off from Deer Valley and I had a checkpoint that was just right off the nose of runway 7. Since I told him I was going to Phoenix, or actually my destination was Coolidge, or not Coolidge, but Casa Grande Airport. But I told them Phoenix, that's the first place I was checking in. They cleared me for a right turn departure, so I just took the right turn instead of going to that checkpoint. So we got out of Deer Valley, and I called up Phoenix right away and got approval to transition Class Bravo again and headed for that Stanfield VOR. Once again. So now I'm kind of going in that reverse order. Made it through the Class Bravo, no problem. Made it to the VOR, no problem. Now this side of the valley is just pitch black. It's the other side of South Mountain, and cities are just, you know, few and far between and smaller. So there's more just black area underneath you. It's not so lit up like it is around Deer Valley. By the way, it's beautiful to fly at night around that area. There's so much light. But so make it to the Stanfield VOR and turn left, and I head towards Casa Grande Airport. And now at this time of night, none of these airports that I'm going to are manned anymore. Deer Valley was when I left, but by the time I get back, they're closed up shop. I get to use my remote control and turn the lights on the runway. And I thought that was pretty cool. you know, tune to the frequency, click, 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 boom, lights are on. There's the airport, right to it. So
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Very that cool. was really cool to have that power. It was funny. I'm coming into land. I'm like going, they're too freaking bright. I got to turn them down a little bit. So I hit the switch a few times and put them on medium. Cause by, you know, on high, when you finally get low enough, they were just too much. So, made the full stop landing, taxi back, take back off and head to, Coolidge, where that was my second destination last time. Again, my second destination this time. Head to Coolidge from Casa Grande, turned the lights on there, and instead of a full stop taxi back, we just did a full stop and go from there. While I was there, actually, that was at Casa Grande. I switched tanks there. So took off at Coolidge, and then now from Coolidge, I'm going backwards. I'm going to Gateway Airport. Now, Gateway Airport has three parallel runways, and Allegiant Air flies out of there. They're a smaller airline. I think they fly. They don't fly anything as big as a 737. It's like an MD-88, stuff like that. More regional jet stuff. And so anyways, Jackie says, I tell her, I said, okay, so we're coming in from the south and east, and according to, you know, their information, you contact tower on this frequency if you're coming in from this direction. And before, by the way, before I left that day, I had one of those small yellow pads. And I had every airport I was going to listed out with every frequency that they have, what TPA was and everything, so I could just flip and look to it. Because I didn't want to get quite as overwhelmed as I was during the day. And it helped out a bunch. And Jackie goes, okay, but are they manned right now? I'm like, well, I hope so. There's an airliner that flies in and out of there. She goes, they're not. I'm like, really? I had no idea. I just assumed they were because an airliner flies out of there. So sure enough, we decide that I'm going to come in on, I think it's 1-2 right. I'm in downwind. I'm just getting ready. I'm about, you know, a few seconds away from turning base, and I hear Allegiant Air, blah, 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 20 miles out, inbound to land, 30 left. Well, great. He wants to land with the opposite runway that I want to land on. And he's bigger and faster, so I make a new call and reannounce my intentions that, all right, since you're coming in, I'm going to cross all three runways and enter the pattern and take 30 right, since he was taking 30 left. And so we do that. In the meantime, another Allegiant Air calls and comes in too. So I was kind of landing in parallel with an airliner off to my left. So that was kind of cool. But, something I forgot to mention these landings a little freaky at first for me. You know, you really lose that depth perception, and I just kept feeling like I was, you know, after my eyes could actually focus and see the ground from the lights from the airplane, it was like, wow, I'm going too fast. I'm like, I'm dropping, sinking too fast, you know, and it wasn't quite as bad as I thought it was. I had one landing where I had that stall horn on for a little longer than I normally do, you know. But it did freak me out a little bit, and I did let out one, oh, shit. yeah, the plane was reusable every time. It was just a little odd for my senses, I guess. So we do another full stop. Stop and go at there, because these runways are freaking long because the airliners fly there. Stop and go from there and take back off and head over to Falcon Field because I got to land there too. I want to try and get all the airports apparently in Maricopa County knocked out. I've got them almost everything. I bet you I have 3/4 of the airports on my terminal area chart already landed at this point. And so I go over to Falcon Field and make my calls there, and a helicopter's just taken off, and he's telling me which way he's going, so I use his runway information to land there, and another stop and go, and that went good. And then from there, I just overflew Scottsdale and landed back at Deer Valley. And like I said, that ride from Falcon Field over flying Scottsdale back to Deer Valley, I was drained and just had a headache. It was so much mental work and just the stress of landing at night for the first few times. I was wiped out. And so you know the requirement is 3 hours and 10 landings, and I knocked out 2.5 hours of it and half the landings in one night. So
nice.
That was the good thing. So so basically after that, two nights ago, I decided to go ahead and knock out the rest of my night landings and get 5 more stop and goes done over at Deer Valley. And
so now were these all dual or were you by yourself yet?
No, all the nights dual. There's no night cross country solo.
Okay.
But I'm signed off to do, solo nights now if I want to. But I doubt I'll bother before the end of my training. So yeah, it's just I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if I'd do it again the same way. But you know, experience is experience when it comes down to it. I learn something every time. And if I was to redo either one of those routes today, I would be more prepared. I wouldn't feel so anxious throughout it, and I'd be able to, you know, get my times written in like I want to and stuff like that to be more accurate with your, you know, how much time it took to get from one location to the other and how much fuel did you have. So, you know, it's a learning process. I don't think you're expected to, you know, knock it out of the park on your first attempt anyways. So I've still got more day cross countries to do, so we'll see how it goes for that. But going back to two nights ago, when I went and did my 5 stop and goes at Deer Valley, I had a complete ball. I had a blast because we were just staying in the pattern, and I had some of the greasiest, sexy landings you've ever seen in your life, man. I don't know if you saw the video yet, but on my second one, the tires just rolled, right? There wasn't even a screech, and I was like going, yes. I go, that was just perfect, you know. I was so nice. Proud of myself at that moment. And she goes, yeah, that was really good. And I'd saved like 1,000 feet versus my last landing too. But I had 5 really, really awesome landings that night. We took off from 2-5 right, did 2 circuits, and then he had a switch. Oh, I'm sorry, 2-5 left, did 2 circuits, and then he had us switch over to 2-5 left because a Gulf Stream was coming in.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so switched over to 2-5 right. Now 2-5 right is quite a bit shorter. They call it really the practice runway. It's really, they tend to have a lot of people who's just doing touch and goes go over there if in the school and leave the long runway to general traffic. But that's not always the case, because I've actually did the majority of my touch and goes off of that other longer runway. But so landing at night, and I have to clear this foothill every time. And there's, you know, that little red light blinking on top of it, but, you know, you still can't see it. You know, you can see the light, but you have no idea really how much further underneath it is you. So I'm not – I know I've done that pattern many, many times, and I'm a lot lower than I was that night. Like I'm – you know, the traffic pattern altitude is 2,500, and by the time I'm on final, I'm only at 2,000. I'm still up at 2,000. I've only lost like 500 feet. Sometimes I only lost 200 feet because I just, you know, I want to stay away from those mountains as much as possible.
Sure.
But so that, see, my fourth landing over there on 25 right, that shorter runway. I didn't quite get it down in time and we floated away. So we decided just to taxi back and take back off. And when I taxied back and called the tower, he asked me if I wanted to switch back over to 25 left. And that was perfect because that was going to be my last landing. So I didn't have to cross the runways after I landed. So it worked out good. So
nice.
Nights are all complete. I'm happy with it. It was a lot of fun. It sure is pretty seeing the lights from up there, you know, and I can't wait to take my family or friends or whatever up for a night flight, you know, sometime in the future, because that's a lot of fun. Even if you're just doing circuits there, it's a good time.
That's cool. One of my long-term goals, and I think I've said this before, is to do a night flight on the 4th of July.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I a lot of 4th of July is I just see tons of airplanes up there circling around all over the place, over the major areas where the big fireworks are going off of. So it seems like a popular night to take the plane out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that about catches me up. This Sunday, I plan on doing a day cross country north this time. The weather's been nice enough. I figure, what the hell, let's go up north. So we're going to do a flight up to Prescott and then over to Cottonwood and back. So it'll just be two airports and, you know, no airports in between us. So it should be a piece of cake compared to what I've been doing.
So now is that one going to be your solo cross countries?
No, I still have to do, because I've only got 2.1 hours of dual day cross country.
Oh, gotcha.
You still got to get three. So that'll knock it out for I'll be over, but whatever.
You're still flying?
Yeah, it's still flying. It's still learning. It's all good. So after that, I'll be signed off for solo cross country at that point.
Very cool.
And then who knows where to go? Everything's boring. I've already went everywhere out here, so. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to go down to Yuma or Blythe, California or something. I don't know. We'll see. And I haven't been studying like I should. I've been trying every few days, or while it's slow at work, like you, Mark, you're like, oh, it's slow. Time to crack the books out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess we'll use that as the transition.
Yeah.
That's all I've been able to do. The weather's pretty much been crap for the past couple of weeks. We've been fogged in and, you know, it doesn't burn off. And besides the fact that, like I think I covered in the last episode, is it's the school's policy that you have to take the written before you start your cross country. So, that's all I've had a chance to do is study. And I've been on Sporty's website using the Study Buddy, and which is great. And you can do either one, the free one or the pay one. And I've been using the free one. And, you know, I'm finally up around 90% on the practice test. So I'm pretty confident in it. I've identified a couple of weak spots. So I'm going to probably, you know, break out the laptop tomorrow and hit those specific areas and really try to knock them out. But that's all I've actually done between the weather and not having a chance. I've actually been holding off on taking the written because my flight school is in the very, very final stages of getting certified to be a testing center. They've got the room set up, the cameras, the computers, everything set up. They went through their, I think, two levels of inspections, and they're waiting on the very last, okay, you're good to go now. And so I was kind of holding off on that, and that was supposed to be last week. But the next closest is from me is Sacramento Executive, which is about a 45-minute drive. And there's another airport up to the northeast, which is probably another 45-minute drive. I mean, not that driving to my airport is you know, all that close. It's still a half-hour drive. But I would rather do it at my flight school where I'm comfortable, you know, just go knock it out. I mean, if I'm going to pay the amount of money that I got to pay to take this test, I want to be, you know, happy, comfortable, and confident. So –
And you've been knocking out some good scores.
Yeah, I'm in the high 80s. I finally broke the 90 barrier, and I keep getting myself caught up in a couple of areas that I'm fuzzy on. I'll just say that. Mm. So I'm pretty comfortable with regs. I'm comfortable with, you know, the part 91, you know, all the different stuff. Weather was kind of kicking my butt. Different functions of weather, density, altitude, pressure, altitude. Then it finally kind of clicked. I just worked those modules several times, and also it was like, oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I found myself, because I hated that section. I'm not even completely done with it. I skipped to something else because I just got tired of looking at it.
Yeah.
But I just got to the point where I started memorizing answers. And I shouldn't do that. It's just I'm not a meteorologist. I never really wanted to be a meteorologist, and I know they want you to be one sort of as also a pilot. It's like your second job.
You know, a good friend of mine who's an ATP told me that he's like, all pilots are amateur meteorologists. Mm. He's all, don't fight it, just learn it. You know, he goes, it's funny because once you get comfortable with it, you hear the guy on the TV, you know, spouting weather predictions, and you look at him and go, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You call him on their BS, you know, you're wrong. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I actually did? And another commercial pilot friend of mine told me, he's like, stop studying sections. Just take a couple of full blown practice tests. That'll identify your weak spots. Then focus on those. He goes, no, weather may be one of the ones that pops up. And he goes, you're not alone. A lot of people have a tough time with it. But so that's what I did. I took a couple of just the full blown 60 question practice tests. And then, you know, I was still in the I think it was like an 81 or an 82. And I was like, but I it identifies. And what was cool, when you take the practice test, it breaks it up into the sections. You go to like a printer friendly mode. There's a button there when you're done,
mm-hmm.
and it prints the whole thing out, or it'll make it so you can print it if you want to.
And you're using Sporty Study Buddy mainly.
Correct. But it'll say, okay, these are, you got one out of one correct. You got two out of three correct, you know, for the, whatever that section was. And then you could look at it and go, oh man, I got three out of nine in weather. It's like, all right, I need to study weather, obviously.
Yeah.
And then there was some other areas that I'm like, oh, God, I haven't even read about that in years, and you get them all right.
Mm. So well, that's like, a good sign. Oh.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's just some things I remember from, because I think I told you online on Twitter that I took my flight school, or my ground school was 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while.
And you're not redoing anything like that now. You're doing it on your own, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of self-study.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and even my instructor or in the chief instructor, there's no need for you to retake the ground school because you've already done it once. Just, you know, when we identify a weak area, we can stop and do, you know, a ground session on that. You know, and one of the ones, honestly, right now is the E6B. I the whiz wheel portion of it, like John, I've got the ASA aluminum one, and it's great because it has a lot of stuff printed on there, and it's like, find this first, then this, and it, which is great, but I don't want to be at 3,500 feet and go,
how did I do that? Yeah. I've got the ASA, but the paper one or whatever that my buddy gave to me. I'm sure they have the same stuff on them, but man.
I've got the Sporty's electronic E6B.
Mm-hmm.
I can whip that out. Okay, I'm good. And I'm fairly comfortable with that.
The cool thing about the whiz wheel, though, is that you only have to spin that dial once.
Yeah.
And all your calculations are done for that. I mean, it's got to be faster than doing it with the calculator.
I would think so, too. And the one thing I know that they're going to say, you know, okay, your battery's just died.
Yeah.
Now what are you going to do?
Sure.
Crap, now I got to break out the whiz wheel. I mean, it's on my trifold, my knee pad. But
I had Martha King show me how to use this thing.
when I asked those questions on Twitter the other day about anybody see any practice problems, whoever's manning the Sporties one actually sent me a link and said, hey, have you seen our study?
Oh, yeah, I saw that reply to you.
Yeah, and I saw that. I was like, you know, it's $20. And I'm like, I think it's going to be a good $20 investment because I'm going to be confident then
mm-hmm.
in using the E6B. So I may just do that. I can't think of his name right now. I just had my email up too. Actually sent me a private message. Let's see, direct message from.
I haven't used
Jonathan Butler.
Oh, okay.
He's also a student pilot, I believe.
Yeah.
And he sent me a link to the GLIM website. And it's a whole thing on the E6B, and it looks really good, and it's got some practice questions on it. So I actually saved it as a Word document, so I'm going to take a look at that tomorrow and see if I can run through some of the problems.
Cool.
So it's just a confidence thing for me. I have no doubt in my mind that I'm going to go up, take the test, sit down, I'll knock out a 85.
Yeah.
But I want to be sure. I don't want to be half-assed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's going to be one of those days, okay, like you know, with John in the check ride, okay, change your course to here, and what's that going to do to your, you know, your fuel and your heading and da-da-da-da. It's like, shit, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not comfortable with that, so I don't want to guess.
Right. I almost want to, like, anticipate all the different places where the DPE is going to possibly divert me to. And almost cheat and have them all printed out. Like, well, if he diverts me from here over to here, then, you know. But
it's not cheating.
Yeah.
My instructor honestly told me to do that. And I kind of did at some point, like beforehand. I showed up with, okay, I can probably get diverted to these couple of places. Turns out he didn't divert me to any of the ones that I tried.
That never works out that way.
Wouldn't be that easy, would it?
So, well, because I didn't think he would, because just the way that airport is, it's a weird little airport, but they have some funky noise abatement things. But yeah, it was, I had done that, and I had heard tips to just do that, kind of show up with some stuff already done. So you have a rough idea and you can double check yourself.
Yeah.
I think it shows something to the DPE though, that you're thinking ahead. You're planning the just in case, you know? So if that builds any brownie points, I don't know, but I would like to think it would.
Yeah. The only thing on the E6B I haven't played around with yet is the inner with the air temperature and pressure altitude stuff. I haven't touched that part of it yet.
Yeah.
So I've only did.
I've never touched it.
No, you either. I've only did the distance and the fuel and the time is the only
and
calculations.
And honestly, I think that's the most important part. You need to know your ground speed to calculate your fuel burn, and then wind velocities and directions and course corrections. I mean, I think once you get that, then you pretty much have everything else. I mean, the basics nailed. I mean, I could be wrong, but that just seems logical to me.
Now, the pre-flight, doing that whole time ground speed thing, that's where the electronic comes in handy. In the plane on the diversion, it's actually probably easier using the whiz wheel because you can just, like Chris said, you just set it up, you have the ratio there, and then you can just figure out everything else. But when you're doing the pre-flight, it was so much easier to throw up. I have the Sporty's iPad app, and you just start with the heading ground speed, put in all the stuff. It spits out the answer. Then you click down to the next one. Okay, what's my time going to be? Or the fuel burn. I think it was time was next. So then it automatically carries over your ground speed, figures out the time. And then you click the fuel, and then it automatically brings all that information over, and you get the fuel stuff. So it's like instantly you've got the whole thing done.
That's the one really, really nice thing about the Sporty's E6B.
Yeah,
that it carries all that info all along. You're not having to sit there and write it all out while you're doing the whiz wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps your last calculations in there for you. So if you only need to edit one or two things, saves you some time, right?
Absolutely. Of course, I still kick myself for not jumping on board. John made a post. Hey, they have it on the app for half price. And I kicked myself because I remembered it the next day. I'm like, oh man! So I could have got it for half price, but hopefully
it's worth
they'll
the $10.
I know it's just
it
one of those things.
Is.
It's like I could have got it for half, and
I hate missing out on a good deal.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think I have like $80 worth of credit right now in the iTunes store or something. I could go get it. It's just the principle, I think.
Right. It is a little bit of the principle, isn't it?
My wife is like the queen of saving money and coupons and stuff like that. So
oh, yeah.
I get a lot of that from her. It's like, why pay full price when you get it on sale?
Oh yeah.
So
everybody knows I do like all my shopping online because I don't like to pay retail. I cannot stand Best Buy and places like that. It's like, oh, are you kidding me? You can't possibly be asking that much money for something like this.
That's how I got my Shadens. I have an awesome pair of Shaden Sonomas, and I happened to be on Twitter one day, and they just popped up and said, for the next 6 hours, if you use this code, you get them for half price.
There you go.
Sold.
Done. Yeah.
Because I was on the fence the whole time. Everybody was pushing Shadens on all the podcasts, and I'm like, damn it. And I went and looked at them like, those are nice. Again, my wife had just purchased me some really nice Ray-Bans, and I was wearing those, and then I saw these Shadens Sonomas. I was like, ooh, I really got to get those. And I was, you know, $200. I'm like, oh, I just can't justify that. Hey, half price. All right, I'm in.
Done.
Mm-hmm. So, done. So, but anyway, back to me. I talked to my instructor today, and I told him I have, you know, at least 3 test sheets that I can show him. I think I have like 5 or 6 now. And he said, come bring them up. I'll look at them, and we'll sign you off and set you up to go take the written. So I'm ready. I, for the most part, I just got to have him look at it, sign it off, and I can go down to the testing center and do it. So
cool.
That's where I'm at.
I'd love to be there in about 2 weeks. It'd be nice. I think if I really put my nose to the grindstone, you know, I could get enough studying in to feel confident that, you know, I still haven't done a full 60-question quiz yet.
I highly recommend do that, and that'll, like I said, that'll identify your weak spots. Do like John did though, and schedule a date, and that way it forces you to study.
Yeah. I also
it was
like
the best
that,
thing I did.
Yeah, you were committed then. I like that website too, examforpilots.org.
That's a good one too.
The reason why I like it over the sporties is because the numbers match up. What I mean is like the number of the question. And so, like, for example, if I'm in a section under regulations or whatever, and the question on there is, you know, number 3023, I have that exact question in my ASA test prep book. And
gotcha.
And you can go look it up. So it was good. Like, even if I don't use it to like see if I know the right answer, I'm like, I think I know what the right answer is. Let me go look it up here. And I do it as a thing where I'm studying to find the right answer. And then I'll go the next time I go through that set of questions, I remembered I looked up that question and I remember what the answer is. And I don't know. I there's several sections that I have not completed yet. You know, I got, you know, just like bored reading through weather, and so now I'm going to switch to something else. But there's several things like en route flight and even navigation I don't think I've went over yet. You know, there's several of them in here that I haven't even touched, but some of it is I already just know it. But we'll see for sure after I start taking the 60-question quizzes.
Go take a full one. I'd be curious to see how well you do. I'll bet you'd be surprising yourself. You'll knock out an 85 and go, wow, that was easy.
I'd be guessing real lucky. I bet you I get a 50 if I try right now. I'm in studying near as much as you think I have, I guess.
Do it right after the podcast. Post it on Twitter.
Chris is going exactly right after the podcast. It's dark down here now. All the ladies have went up to bed.
Yeah.
And it's only what 2:30 in the morning for you, John?
It's 1:30.
1:30. Okay. Yeah, you're only 2 hours ahead of me now.
But I got to be up at 6 or 7.
Yeah. Did you get your car back to the house?
I did get the car back to the house.
Good deal.
It's a long trek, but
you
got
to
really.
Get up at 5:30 to
put the chains
unbury
on.
Your car again.
Put the chains on.
No, it's actually in the garage. Roads are fine.
Preheat it.
So
get the preheater.
Actually, I do need to do that more. Warm up my car.
Yeah, I remember when I used to live back in Missouri, and it was ridiculously cold that my like door would be frozen shut, and you like I couldn't even like pull the handle up, it'd be frozen shut, and I'd have to go get like a hot bucket of water and throw it on the door and quickly reach for the door to unlock it, because at that point it just turned to solid ice a few seconds later, you know. Wow. I'm thrilled not to be doing that anymore.
My grandparents owned a glass company here in town for almost 40 years. And that was their favorite thing for people to do. Go ahead and throw that hot water right on top of that frozen windshield. Give me a call right after.
Yeah. Yeah.
as your windshield explodes mm-hmm. or cracks or something.
Yeah, not a good thing. So I think we've pretty much covered everything. We're up to date.
I believe yeah. so.
All right. Well, should we get out of here, guys? Do a little shout outs or anything?
Yeah.
I don't have any, but go for it.
Well, first of all of my CFIs, especially Usman for getting me the rest of the way and probably in the end teaching me the most. Just everyone and the DPE for being a pretty awesome DPE. It was just a fun flight. And I learned so much from him. And then I guess a shout out to my girlfriend for being the first victim. See how it goes this Sunday.
Have fun. Don't scare her.
I'm not trying to scare her. I'm trying so bad not to scare anyone.
Make it a nice and smooth flight.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, the best weather. Unlimited visibility.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be good. So I think that's my main shout outs.
All right. I don't have a lot of shout outs really either, but a couple of guys recently I've been talking to on Twitter, like Scrapyard Sound, Dave, and Roughneck Flyer, Aaron. Thanks a lot for the comments and everything, and checking out the podcast and the videos. Chris Muncy, me and him's been chatting a lot. Good guy. He just got a new job, so hope he's liking it. Got a nice job too. It sounds like a lot of fun. And Twilight Flyer, Gabby, I've been digging your podcast. I knocked out episode 2 today, so I got about like 3 or 4 more to catch up. Appreciate all the support and the comments, and keep us you know, oh, what was I going to say? Keep us motivated with your comments and questions and stuff, and Mark and I will eventually get this test over with and a check right under our belt too.
Man, I sure hope so.
Yeah.
You will. The written's the written's the easy one.
Stop saying that, because that just freaks me out even more.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I don't like any tests. I wasn't a great test taker in high school. But see, this is actually something I care about, so, you know, I'll do better. I promise.
When math really counts.
I know. Math is a big deal.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern. It's my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com. Or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway.
Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ. And my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
Anyways, that about covers it. John, you want to take us out?
Sure. Well, I guess this about wraps up episode 8, Bravo, of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
You schedule your test yet?
No, Mark's doing that part. I'm doing the flying part. Mark's doing the test part.
Yeah.
Between the two of us, we make a decent pilot.
As I take a drink of my beer, you say that.
Yeah, I'm drinking too.
I haven't opened mine yet. I've got it in my hand. I've got my opener here. Sound effects. All right, I'm ready, I guess. Let's see how many times it takes me to get through this without goofing it up.
All right.
Welcome to episode 8 of the In the Pattern podcast. I'm your host, Chris, in Arizona. Along with me, of course, is our two other virtual pilots. Oh, that ain't going to work. Not virtual pilots. I meant to
say, we don't exist.
I meant to say, along with me in the virtual hangar. Sorry, hold on just a second, guys. My wife's decided to vacuum. Oh, and my door is completely shut all the way, so.
Oh, God.
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, there it is. It's shut
now. I think it's gone now.
I think it's gone now. It might come back. Hold on. No.
There's, now you kick me off now.
There's part one.
There's part one.
Am I still allowed to stay on?
Absolutely. You're the editor.
Yeah, you're the editor. I don't want the
job.
See
why I'm the editor now?
Yeah.
See why I took it? Yeah.
I don't want the job, really.
Yeah, me either.
In the beginning, I thought I wanted to do that, and now I don't. About 2 hours. Looks like we might have a part one and a part two again, huh?
I think we're going to get poor known John for Alphas and Bravos.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, seriously.
It's the In the Pattern Alpha Bravo show.
Yeah. Jeez. Just have them press pause. Leave it at 2 hours. Whatever it takes.